Well, welcome everybody. Another fantastic episode of Playing with Perspective, the Suspended Animation Podcast. I have an amazing guest today. Russ Cummings is an experienced management consultant and business coach who has spent the last 35 years working with dynamic family businesses that want to grow. He prefers to work closely with his clients on long-term relationships, and his client base includes large businesses like Bundaberg Brewed Drinks, Shine Lawyers, and Morgan's Group in Canberra, and a myriad of small and medium-sized businesses as well. He also provides coaching support to 67 business advisors across Australia, New Zealand, and the UK in how to grow their business and add exceptional value to their clients. Russ is based at Burleigh Heads on the Gold Coast in Queensland, but services clients across Australia and New Zealand. He is happily married with two gorgeous daughters, a crazy dog, and is an avid motorcycle rider doing upwards of 30,000 kilometers per year on his bike. My Lord, Russell.
I love it.
Fantastic. Well, welcome.
Thanks, Darren. Great to have you. Great to be here, and thanks for having me on board.
My pleasure. It's going to be a great show, and the topic for today is really something that's fascinating and something that we hear about more and more and talk about more and more these days, is building a business around your lifestyle and make not just another me too business, which is not that simple, is it?
No, it's not. And I think business is quite complex and difficult. And anybody says it's easy is probably having themselves on. But it doesn't need to be impossible. It just needs some hard work and some thinking. And I think too many people jump into business. I think Michael Gerber in his book The E-Myth talked about it. They have an entrepreneurial seizure where they have this great idea, and I'm going to go into business for myself, and that's the last time they ever do anything really entrepreneurial. And I think that thing that's missing often is that business acumen and entrepreneurial flair that they brought to the business to start off with, and then we get caught up in the doing and forget about all that stuff.
We'll talk some more about that youthful energy and inquisitiveness and curiosity and sense of creation.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. We do all the fun stuff, and then we start putting on staff and we start doing other things, and we don't put the processes in place, because when we're one man bands, we can do it all in our heads and keep it all there, and we've got, all of a sudden you're trying to teach somebody else to do what you do, and that's when the problems thing, and that's when the stress comes into business as well.
Yep, you know? Absolutely.
And business can be extremely stressful. And I think in the current environment where things are changing very rapidly, there's a lot more competitive pressure than there's probably ever been. And I think there's just a lot more general pressure in society for people that, businesses, people are bringing that stress to business to work as well.
Definitely. I totally agree. I mean, now today we're going to talk about some really interesting stuff. Among them, the main pitfalls that many businesses face these days, and how we can prevent or overcome them. But before we get into, some questions, I thought maybe just give us a little, minute or two about who you are, what you do, and just set the scene for what we're going to talk about today.
Okay. So I've been doing this, it's pretty much all I've done. So I've got a degree in agriculture, believe it or not. So I did an honors thesis in Merino sheep genetics, and I worked as for the university for a little while, and worked out I was not going to be a researcher, and became a farm management consultant. Also worked out then I wasn't very good at what you spray the crops with and drench the sheep with, but I had a head for the business side of things and the planning side of things, and started to do more and more of that. I got more and more referrals outside of agriculture into food processing and those sorts of industries. And before long, that's all I've done. I've been a partner in a firm that we grew that firm extremely rapidly, sort of four times in 2 years. Wow. And so I learned a lot of the pain of growing businesses rapidly, and about business growth and the things that you need to do, and also some of the pitfalls for doing that along the way. Last 15 years or so, I've really just focused on working really closely with family businesses that want to grow. I've done corporate and I've done government, and I don't enjoy working in those sectors as much as I enjoy working in the private sector. So,
right.
Love doing that. Love sitting across the table from people and helping them map out their strategies and their plans. And particularly love it when they really kick some goals and we really comes together and we see some amazing stuff happening. So it's quite an exciting business. I just love it. So that's why I kept doing it for all this time. I just love it. I keep thinking of other things I'd rather go and do, and I can't think of anything else I'd rather do than this. So,
I can imagine no 2 days are ever the same.
None. None.
Which is very, very interesting and keeps you, keeps it fresh and keeps it interesting.
Yeah, it does. It does. And I actually, that's one aspect that I really enjoy is that no day is ever vanilla and no 2 days are ever the same. So, there's always, it's always an interesting mix of what's happening. And that's what keeps me, keeps me going.
Fantastic. Well, let's dive in. We'll kind of dive in high level and then we'll drill down in some more strategies and tactics that hopefully the listeners and the viewers can access and utilize. But in your experience, working with businesses and also on boards and running businesses, what are some of the main pitfalls that many businesses face these days?
Okay. And I think let's define what we mean by business. So I'm sort of thinking sort of small, medium-sized businesses rather than larger organizations. Sure. But the principles still hold true. But if we think about a lot of the smaller businesses, the challenges I see, I think I alluded to it when we started talking, is there are a lot of vanilla businesses, and that is a business that's, I call that a copycat business. So what happens is we start out our business, we go, I'm going to become an XYZ, let's say a physiotherapist, and I just set my business up exactly the same way as everybody else's business.
Right.
So it's just completely vanilla, just like everybody else's. And the only thing that's different largely is me in the business, and then the branding that I might put around it, my logo and my name and my business. But I find that if therefore we get average performance, if you know what I mean. So people expect excellence, but they've set themselves up almost to achieve what everybody else achieves.
Yeah.
Along the way. So as a result, they just don't get what they want out of the business, and it doesn't actually deliver their lifestyle goals and the things they want to do, and they end up overworked, underpaid, overstressed, and really struggling.
Yeah.
And that's probably the biggest mistake I see, that they don't have a clear strategy for moving ahead.
Perfect. Actually, I might just jump in. This might be a really interesting point to further explore, is that, I've always been of the philosophy, if something is working and it's a great model, you don't need to recreate the wheel. But what you're talking about here is not so much just not recreating the wheel. It's more using what's been working, but adding it, doing it your own way, not copying the way that everybody else does it. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly right. So it's probably picking a different wheel, if you want to use your analogy. So you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Just, do you want to have mag wheels or spoked wheels? What do you want? Wooden wheels, I don't mind. That's not important. For me, it's about the business model you set up we'll come back to this again, I think, but need to build around your lifestyle. That's really important, but also needs to be profitable and distinctive in the marketplace. And I guess what happens is, particularly in service-based industries, I see this more than product-based industries where we've got a retail product or something to sell. But if we've got a service-based industry, and if we could be a trade, it could be a health professional, it could be, professional services like yourself and myself, we often just copy what everybody else does, and we don't actually sit down and think through who's our target market, what do they really want from us, and what are their frustrations and things. And then we also don't think then about, how can I deliver a product or a service that deals with those frustrations? We just deliver what everybody else does. And we don't think about pricing. We just do it the same way that everybody else does it, at the same level as everybody else does. Yeah. We don't actually think about niching, anything, all those sorts of things.
And we're just me too. We're just another me too.
Yeah, just a thing, I see. I mean, a simple example is 20 or 22 years ago, 23 years ago, when I went by myself, I asked some clients what they hated about professionals like myself. And this is one of the questions you could ask your clients. What don't you like about, professionals in my area? Of course, not me, but other people you might deal with, So I said, tell me about the lawyers and the accountants and that sort of stuff that you deal with. And they gave me a list of things that they really disliked about those industries. And And I said, okay, so if I did this and this and this and stopped doing that, would that be a better option? And they went, yeah, they would love that. And therefore, I set up quite a different business model very, very early on. Now, lots of people have adopted that similar business model now, but 20-odd years ago, I was the only person, for argument's sake, that I knew that was providing fixed service fees.
There you go. Yeah.
So everybody else was charging by the hour, and I had a flat fee retainer-based model that I worked with. And so it's just simple things like that, because that differentiated me in the marketplace. Yep. Now, of course, then I had to have the sales processes and those sorts of things to be able to explain why that was better than the paradigm that they were in, which was you get charged a high hourly rate. So those sorts of things are what I'm talking about. And then what are the packages and things can we build up to make sure that we have a different offer, very different offer to our competitors.
And it's so logical, isn't it? It's just about asking your clients, what do you want? We always assume what people want instead of asking.
Yeah, and sometimes they don't know what they want, so that's a dangerous thing to ask for, because sometimes people just don't know what they don't know, because they haven't, you know. But I found that question of asking them, what don't you like about the people you deal with, and what adds real value? What's some of the stuff that would really add value that if I could do it for you would be amazing?
Yeah.
Now, some of the stuff they wanted, I couldn't do it, because, you know, everybody wants everything for nothing. Yep. You know, absolutely. So some of you go, well, that'd be really good, but I can't deliver that much service for, you know, $100 a month. It just can't happen. So
great. I mean, a great point. And as you said, maybe it's not about asking, what do you want? It might be about asking, what don't you want?
Exactly. What don't you want?
You can narrow it down really dramatically and tell us exactly the direction we need to go in.
And pulling together some stuff with some options. I'm not a great believer in having a menu of services for people, for clients to pick from. If you go to my website, you'll see there's some layout, some options for packages for you. But very rarely do people come on board and say, I want the number 3 package sort of stuff. They normally talk about it and say, well, I think I sort of want that. But we negotiate and tailor a package specifically for them. But I'm not in favor of letting clients pick what options they want to put into packages and services, because often they don't understand the value and they purely picking on price in the end.
Exactly. And it's hard to really break things down into packages when everybody has such individual needs and subtleties in different industries. So it's more about a consultative approach to building a solution.
Yeah, that's right. Of course it is. You know, and then you can really start to do some stuff. I guess the other thing I find, again, particularly in service industries, is that and this can be trades and all sorts of things, but we often try and build our marketing and our messaging around our expertise. Mm-hmm. So we say, you know, I'm the best, you know, let's say I'm going to pick a physiotherapist today, right? I'm the best physiotherapist, right? Yep. Or I'm the best plumber. That's all right. Doesn't matter what it is. Yep. But in reality, and therefore we focus on saying, you know, I've got the best technical skills of any person in my industry. The problem is your clients can't tell.
Definitely.
Right. So they have no way of benchmarking that. And so we build this stuff around our authority, and the clients will actually come to us. It's almost as a given that you're going to be good at what you do, that you should be good at what you do. You might need to validate a little bit, but often we build all our marketing around that, you know, and that I do all this training, I've got all these qualifications, all that sort of stuff. Your clients don't care. All they want to understand is can you actually do what you said you're going to do?
Yeah.
Yes. So there's a bit of validation there. So it's part of that trust equation is, you know, making sure that you have that credibility. That's really important. But once you've got, you know, most people assume you have that anyhow, you know, it's like saying, if you're an accountant, it's like saying, you know, I'm the most accurate accountant. I assume my account's accurate. It's not a competitive advantage. It's not a competitive advantage.
That's right.
They add the numbers up correctly. You know, that's something, you know what I mean? So you can't. But the number of accounts I go to that talk about, you know, we're really, really accurate and we're really diligent. I go, aren't they all?
Yep.
Yeah, well, you'd think, but not, they aren't all, but that's not why people go. They go for the whole, all the other reasons around it. What's your intent in helping them to do things, and how you're going to help them grow their business and that sort of stuff. So if you look at your marketing and you're very much around your capability and your technical skill, then you might want to think about how you might modify that. They're probably the two big mistakes. And then the last one is, not the last one, there's plenty more, but is this thing that we talked on initially, and probably the title of the podcast a bit, is people don't build a business around their lifestyle. They do it the other way around.
Yeah.
They try and build their lifestyle around their business. And often, if you sit back and say, this is what I'm going to do, then you actually have to come up with smarter solutions and different solutions in order to do that. And then you can't be that sort of copycat business, can you?
Exactly.
Because then you created something special and something different.
Now that's a really good segue into your journey as well. I mean, we had a chat just before we started the podcast, and you mentioned that you now work 4 days a week and you ride on the fifth day.
Yeah, I do.
Tell us about how that came about and how that's affected your business and your lifestyle.
Well, what happened was I've always worked, I've worked very hard, and at different times in my life, I've worked extremely hard and worked long hours, done all the mistakes that tell other people not to make. I've done all that, and there are times in your business where you need to put the effort in. In your early startup phases and some of that sort of stuff, you really do need to put the time in. There is no substitute for the time early on, but that's okay. But once your business starts to mature a bit, then you can relax more into your lifestyle stuff, provided you've set it up well from the start.
Yeah.
But what happened for me was my family and I moved from Bundaberg down to the Gold Coast, live on the Gold Coast about 3 years ago.
Right.
And my wife said, you need to get an interest outside of just the family, the kids' sport and that sort of stuff. My two teenage daughters had grown up and they weren't doing surf life saving, all the stuff we used to do. And said, you need to find an interest for you. I think she thought I was going to go stamp collecting or do something else or do woodworking or something. And I decided I'd get back into riding motorbikes, which I'd really enjoyed as a teen.
How did she react to that initially?
Yeah, we had some rather tense negotiations with her and my daughters, and we negotiated a settlement. Anyway, we won't go into that. So we got through all that. So that was quite good. And and then I started riding the motorbike. Just remembered why I loved it so much, and so I do 30,000 k's on my bike, as I said, a year. So I tend to ride the bike rather than drive the car now.
Yep.
Because I just enjoy it so much. But what happened was I had to get a license. And to get a license, you have to ride in Queensland. You have to ride with another licensed rider.
All right.
And so I found this very kind gentleman who's since passed away. He's a really good friend of mine. He's passed away, but he took me riding with him on a Tuesday morning and sometimes on Saturdays. But on Tuesday mornings we rode with this group. So I thought, well, if I'm going to get my license, I need to take Tuesdays off. So I started taking Tuesdays off, and then realized that it wasn't impacting on my business in any way, shape, or form. The fact that I was only working 4 days a week And so I've just kept doing it. So pretty much Tuesdays are blocked out. And
I don't, you didn't so, decide to take Wednesday Tuesday off as well and see what happened?
I could, yeah. I could. At the moment, I get a fair bit of motorbike riding, but that Tuesday is a day just for me. So so it's good. And I still don't work extremely long hours or anything anymore. I don't work long hours. I don't work weekends, that sort of stuff. So I've got that time. But I think the interesting thing is that people say to me, but you must work like a crazy man when you're at work, and how do you fit it all in, that sort of stuff. And I've got to be honest, it's just made me be smarter and better at what I do, and therefore I actually come back from the rides quite relaxed. It's pretty zen riding a motorbike, because everybody's out there to kill you, so it's a really good idea to concentrate pretty hard, so you can't be thinking about other things. So I come back quite mentally relaxed from a day on the bike, and and I find that my brain has mulled over a whole heap of problems and solved them and picked them up. And I find I'm just way more productive when I'm at work, like really productive at work.
Yeah.
So that it's that thing that we talked about, Darren, of present is not necessarily productive. Just because you're at work.
What a great phrase. Present is not necessarily productive. That's brilliant.
Yeah. So just because you're at work for 8 hours doesn't mean you're actually productive for 8 hours.
Yep.
And sometimes I find that too often we just put the time in, and you'd be better off to go and do something else. Yeah. I had a client just recently who was having a bit of a tough day with some staff members and everything. And I just said to him, he's a mad keen surfer. I said, just go for a surf.
Yeah.
He said, what? I said, just go home now. You're not, there's no point staying at the office.
You're not going to be productive. Just get out.
You're not going to be productive. So just go for a surf. And he went for a surf and came back and said, the best thing I've ever done. Thanks.
Love it.
So sometimes we just don't realize what it is, and we keep pushing and we keep trying to make things happen. And I think there's too much push in what we do and not enough focus and letting it happen and rolling with the punches a bit. Yeah, definitely. Too much push in our society.
And I must say, for me, I mean, I love taking drives. Nothing like the stress that you might find on a motorbike, but I just take a little drive. I have my route.
No.
And that's when some of the best ideas and strategies come into my head when I'm not thinking particularly about anything. I'm just looking at the park, looking at the water, looking, just taking a ride, listening to music, and all these great ideas come into my head. And then when I get home, I've got so much to action. So I've got a lot to say about that exact philosophy.
Yeah. I use the sauna as well. I love a sauna. And like for yesterday, I'd actually spent 1,000. I did 1,000 k's on Sunday, Monday on the bike, and I was a bit over the bike. So yesterday, I didn't go bike riding. Tuesday was yesterday, but I went to the gym and then sat in the sauna for 40 minutes afterwards, and it's the same. Yeah, it's the same thing. Yeah. So you got to find something that works for you. I'm not saying go and get a motorbike; that might be good for you, but but like you go for a drive, find a sauna, get a massage, whatever it is, just sit on the beach, meditate. Doesn't matter.
Anything that allows you to kind of just get your head away from in the trenches. And it's amazing what ideas and creativity will come to you when you're not focused on that.
Yeah. You solve an amazing number of problems because the psychology is your subconscious mind is thinking about this stuff anyhow. Yeah. So your subconscious brain keeps processing all this information. And often we just can't get in touch with that subconscious brain because of we're under stress and we've got all these paradigms and things. But if you just let it happen, it often will, that good stuff will come to you. Your brain's already thought it through.
Absolutely. Yeah. And a lot of people say meditation is a very similar process.
Yeah.
When you're meditating, all the answers come to you because you're not focused on them. Yeah.
Yeah, not focused. Well, people say to me all the time, you know, the ideas come to them in the shower. That's because you're not thinking about work. You're thinking about washing your hair or whatever.
It's accessing the subconscious mind.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's really powerful. Awesome.
But so in terms of getting back to some business strategies, before we get into those, just want to get an idea of, obviously you mentioned that, you know, most of the businesses you deal with are probably smaller than the larger ones, but I'm sure you've got experience with those as well. Are there any nuances that you find between the two in terms of, you know, pitfalls or growth, et cetera, strategies for growth?
Yeah, no, I've worked with some really large businesses along the way, and still do.
Good.
Some larger private businesses, but also got the smaller businesses. I think the larger businesses find it a little bit easier to implement strategy. They've normally got teams of people that they can draw on to implement, and normally got a few more cash reserves and things that they can throw at some of these things. Of course, the problems are often bigger and need a far more detailed approach, but whereas the smaller businesses, I find their challenges are around how do they find the time to actually execute some of the strategy? How do they free up enough resources to go and do this? And sometimes cash can be a problem, but not that many times do we need to spend lots and lots of cash on some of this stuff. So so that's probably the difference between the two, I think. I guess the other thing I find initially with smaller businesses are their planning processes aren't as robust. Yeah. So we don't have, you know, we tend to fly a lot more by the seat of our pants rather than having a clear plan and a strategy.
Yep.
On the flip side, I find smaller businesses are far more nimble and agile, and we make decisions far more rapidly. We can pivot really quickly when we need to and go in a different direction. Opportunities appear and we can ensnare them. Yeah, that can also be a challenge because, you know, we tilt at every windmill, but, you know, there's a bit of danger there. So having a clear strategy where you're having is important because sometimes it's just as important to say no to opportunity as it is to go and try and grab it because it's just a distraction sometimes, a massive distraction from your core business. So, I find small businesses really nimble.
Okay.
It doesn't get caught up in the bureaucracy of decision making and approvals and those sorts of things. It's just like, let's do it. And away we go. And which is what I really like. That's why I work with family and privately owned businesses. I find them flexible and quick.
I mean, and these days I find that there are so many services and outsource style models and freelance models and applications and systems that you can adopt and use relatively low cost.
Yeah.
To increase your productivity and efficiency without actually having to hire full-time staff. I mean,
no, exactly.
Small business can access all these things. I use people overseas for freelancing, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. I've had virtual assistants in the Philippines for over 10 years now. So
wow.
Yeah.
I think it's brilliant. It just takes a bit of tweaking initially, but it can save you a lot of time, and it allows you to still be nimble and agile, and move with.
And I think that's a really good point, because that harks back to that point I made about technical skill. So what happens is often people jump in and they have a technical skill, but the skills they don't have are often around business and marketing and managing people and some of those sorts of things.
Yep.
And it's often easier just to get somebody to come in and help you with those aspects of your business than it is to try and learn it yourself.
Yep,
because A, you may not have the aptitude, the time, nor the capability to do it. I think you're right.
It's amazing.
There's so many more options for that now.
Definitely. It's a global marketplace. It's a global world. It's a global workplace. It's fascinating. You know?
Yeah, it is. It is.
Even now we're doing this on Zoom. Face to face, we've got audio, we've got video, we can transcribe it using Rev. I mean, look at the services available to us, and we haven't moved from our desk.
No, it's excellent. Both sitting here in our board shorts, it's fantastic.
It's quite amazing.
Which is great, and that gives us the capacity then to service clients all around the world.
Absolutely, incredible. Yeah, so we've created a whole new world of opportunities and a whole new way of working, really.
Yeah, yeah, and it gives you flexibility to work in different locations. Definitely. As long as you've got a internet access, you can do just about anything in lots of cases. Now, sometimes you've got to renegotiate the sort of service, but depends on your business as well. If you're a massage therapist, then the internet doesn't really help you, except possibly for marketing.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
You can't Zoom a massage yet.
Probably coming. But you might become a massage trainer or teacher and put out some videos, or who knows? Anything can happen.
And I think that's one of the other things that we often don't do enough of, is thinking about what you said. What technical skills and capability do I have, and how can I make some money out of that?
Yep.
So a client of mine in the health industry, I won't identify them. I'm quite careful about client confidentiality. Sure. But we sat down and he had some very successful business, but had some particular expertise in quite a tight niche. And we've set up a training program that's just about increased revenue by 50%. And he has holidays flying around the world delivering training programs in destinations that he chooses to do that. And all we came from just sitting down thinking about, what are your real strengths, and what could we do with that? And he'd already done a few training programs, but we just converted it into a business. Just a bolt-on business. So, often we don't think about what our strengths are and what we could be really doing.
Definitely. And again, this is so in line with the theme of this podcast, which is building a business around your lifestyle. I mean, nowadays more than ever before, you can do it. You just have to think about how to do it.
Exactly. Exactly. So where can you travel to? Where do you want to travel to? And what can you do when you're there? Yeah.
Yep,
100%. And, I guess the other thing to be really careful of is there are thousands of people there. They're trying to do the same thing. So
it's a
very competitive marketplace.
Very true. Very true. Well, which actually brings me to my next question really well. So let's get into the nuts and bolts. How do you actually achieve growth, or help companies achieve growth for the long term? What kind of strategies do you put in place?
Okay. So, obviously this varies from business to business, what the actual particular strategies you put in place. But the thing I find most of all is most people don't have a strategy, right? So if you're going to grow your business, you need to have a clear strategy for how you're going to grow it. And for me, that's about sitting down and saying, who's our target market? What products and services do they want from us? And we've talked about that. How do we package those up into something unique and something different to what the competition are offering? Sometimes it can just be adding a product to a service, or a service to a product, or whatever. The car industry's done a great job on that. You buy your car now and it's got 7 years free servicing, or 3 years free servicing in it. Everybody knows it's not free, but it makes it really hard then to compare buying car A to another dealer that doesn't provide the servicing, doesn't it? So you go, I've got the servicing thrown in. I have to pack it. I could pay a little bit extra for that car, but it's got all that stuff built into it. So copy from what good companies are doing, and look at the other ones. McDonald's do a great job on value meals, all sorts of stuff. The economics of that is phenomenal. But we can do the same thing in our business. So how do we add a package of things together? So instead of just selling a hamburger, we sell a hamburger with chips and a drink. What can you package up that maybe relatively low cost additions to your product or your service, but have high perceived value from the client? So getting that product strategy right is really important. And that's asking those questions of your clients. What do you hate? All that sort of stuff. Pricing, I think pricing is a really competitive strategy. I wrote a blog article on this just a little while ago. You know, there are not only the level of price that you set. So, you know, there's a couple of methodologies for looking at that cost plus and competitor pricing and some other stuff. But looking at the level of pricing, but also then looking at how you collect the price, how you collect the money. And is it, you're just going to charge on a transactional basis? Are you going to charge a commission basis? Could you charge a subscription basis? What are the things, you know? And I buy underwear, toilet paper, and shaving stuff all on subscription now.
Perfect.
You know, who would have thought, I'd be buying jocks, a company called Nobby, Australian company, they're fantastic.
And delivered to your door.
Yeah, once a month they turn up. I've stopped the subscription now because I've got more pairs of jocks than I need. But for a while there, you know, it was great. And, you know, Dollar Shave Club, I bought, you know, a subscription for my razors and stuff. And they're the best quality razors I've ever bought. Yep. And
I've heard that.
It's economic and everything else. So, you know, like, just think differently about your business. How could you do things differently?
Exactly. And that's another great example of not reinventing the wheel, but remolding it and repackaging it and making it a unique experience to your customers.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And then once you get your strategy right, you need to get your marketing right.
Yep.
So that's really important. But until you've done that pre-work and got your strategy really clear and your products and your pricing models and that sort of stuff, you don't really have anything to sell. Yeah. So so now you can go to market and get your messaging right and get out there. The other thing I'm finding with lots of people, the other sort of tip I'd have for people in this sort of space is there's a lot of hype around social media and web marketing and all that sort of stuff. And yes, it's really powerful and it should definitely be part of your mix. But don't forget the things like traditional marketing tools, you know, networking and one-to-one, you know, that sort of stuff. And you and I've met through and, you know, a networking group essentially. Yep. So, you know, don't forget the power of that because people buy from people. Yeah. 100%. And therefore I can make a connection with you in 10 minutes, whether it's by Zoom or over a cup of coffee, and which could take you a year to build online that credibility, enough capability for you to feel comfortable to pick up the phone and say, hey, but you know, with people, you get recommendations, you get all that sort of stuff. So don't forget those sort of traditional things. Don't forget 100%. Build centers of influence.
Yeah.
I just find there's this big push for social media and throw everything on Facebook. You know, the other thing with social media is make sure you're on the right platforms. Because I find too many people are trying to sell product on platforms when their target market's not there, certainly not there to buy their product.
And you have to execute on those platforms in the way that's native to the platform as well.
Exactly.
A lot of people don't do that.
There's a lot to think about. Yeah, there is, you know, so getting that marketing right. So once you got your strategy right and you start to get your positioning right, then you need to also build capability. So there's sort of three legs to this stool. So you've got to make sure you've got the capability to execute on that strategy. And that capability could be, I need marketing expertise. It could be, I need some business acumen. My technical skills could be good, but I might need to get some advice I might need finance, I need people, all those sort of things. So you got to have the capability to execute. So think very carefully right now what that capability is. It comes in different forms, but we've got the strategy, we've got our capability. And then the third piece to that whole thing is commitment. So we then need, and for me, the commitment piece is really around making sure we've got a clear, coherent plan. And we've cascaded that down. We have a 3-year plan, a 1-year plan, and a 90-day plan.
Right.
You know, they're all linked. We're all aiming to that 3-year, 5-year goal sort of thing.
Yeah.
But what are the steps we've got to take in order to do it? So you want a plan that you can hold yourself accountable to. Yeah. And storing it in your head is just the dumbest place to keep it. A, because it changes. Yeah. So we modify things on the run in our heads, and we move things around, and we skip things and other things. Where if you write it down, it's really quite an important part of the process, I think, is to write things down and get them down on paper, or doesn't have to be paper, electronic pens are fine, electronic stuff's fine. But we need to get them down in a format that you then can sit back and observe and analyze and pull apart and go, well, that's actually a really dumb plan. What am I thinking about doing that for? You know,
yep,
which happens. You know, a first draft is often, really? Is that what you're going to do? And you're thinking, actually, yeah.
Yep. Well, sometimes the first draft's the best as well.
You know, I love quick and dirty one-page plans. So we get them out fast and everything else. Because often, you know, because I was talking about that subconscious thing, often the stuff that comes through straight from your subconscious first up is the stuff you need to focus on.
Exactly.
And I find most business people know what they need to do in their business. They're just unsure of how to go about it a lot of the time.
Yeah. Too true.
Fantastic. So that strategy, capability, commitment is probably the starting point for businesses that really want to grow.
Gotcha. Yeah. Beautiful. No, that's very, very useful. I mean, obviously don't want you to disclose any particular clients, but have you got any case studies or examples of, you know, something that you want to share?
Yeah, there's some, again, I'm pretty careful about confidentiality, but, some good examples. A client in the food service industry that I started working with, a client said he didn't really want to grow his business. He just wanted to, we focused on lifestyle, and he actually just wanted to spend less time in the business, less stress. And we set some KPIs around the number of games of golf he played a week and how many holidays they had a year.
Yeah.
And which is a really interesting set of KPIs. Before long, we'd not only had, I worked with him for a 3 or 4 year period till he sold his business, but we grew it from sort of, $3 million turnover to $10 million turnover.
Wow.
Profitability went up by a factor of, from factor of five. So you work out what 3 times the revenue on 5 times the profit is, in terms of dollars for us. Had holidays, played lots of golf, did lots of stuff. The business went from working 6 days a week to 4 days a week. All that sort of stuff. And it all started just from setting some of those goals and saying what we really wanted. And then looking at the business and pulling it apart to say, hey, some of this is not working for us. Our model's not working. We're not profitable enough. So I like to make sure we set quite high profit targets with clients, because, and people will say, but we can't achieve that. And I say, why not? They go, well, nobody else in our industry achieves that. And I go, yeah, because you're doing the same as everybody else. So,
exactly.
So what have we got to change? So my rule of thumb there, just for anybody listening, you should be, after you pay yourself a salary for your labor, be able to, your net profit should be somewhere between 20 and 30% of sales.
Nice.
Yep. Because then out of that, you've got to pay tax, capital, and reward yourself and your other investors with dividends. But that's my rule of thumb. And most businesses do 4 or 5%, just so you know where we're at. So we're talking about that. And people just say to me, well, how are we going to achieve it? I said, I don't know, but let's sit down and work out what you've got to do to get there.
Yeah,
because there's no magic pixie dust to sprinkle around businesses and make this sort of stuff happen. Mm-hmm. So that's a great example. We sort of grew the business rapidly. A small business, a training business that I worked with, we sat down and worked out, they were delivering face-to-face training. We sat down and worked out that there was a real opportunity to move into an online training market.
Right.
But there were some particular difficulties with that, because we had a particular product that needed to be quite tightly certified. We sat down and found one of these outsourced services that would do exactly what we were asking for.
Exactly.
And built that into our online practice. And all of a sudden we now had something that was compliant, completely compliant, and which meant we can scale very quickly. And that business has done amazing stuff.
Yeah, excellent.
So it's three or four times in 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
So again, there's no magic bullet. It's just about really thinking and analyzing and putting the right strategy in place and executing on that properly, and things will happen.
Yeah. And just trying to think about what are we going to do to be different in this marketplace?
Yeah.
The messaging is really important once you get to that point, but until you've got the strategy right, you can do all the marketing you like. Now, I'm not suggesting that doing what happens in lots of industries may not be profitable, may not be enough for you. If it is, that's fine. But if you really want to grow your business and you want to push it, further than you might wish, then evidence would suggest you could, then you probably need to think about a different model. Yep. But you know, some businesses are extremely profitable, and that's not a problem. It's just I find that after a while, people run out of enthusiasm for it because it's all just a bit vanilla and a bit, so they're profitable and they're happy, but they're stressed and, you know, all those sort of things. Yeah.
Very true. Yeah. I mean, and look at, Uber, for example, there's no reason why you can't do something totally revolutionary and be extremely successful. Right?
Exactly.
And so there's no reason why you have to do what's always been done by our industry.
No, yeah. That's the other thing too. And you know, I think that's the key is disruption. And it's not, I don't think it's about coming up with the new Uber. Sometimes it's just a slightly different spin on what you might do. You know, it might be just packaging in a simple analysis or diagnostic or some sort of reporting mechanism or some value add, you know, training package. Yep. Bolted onto the side of what you're doing in terms of service. You know, if you've got product, then you know that can be about product range. Looking at, you know, if you're selling products, it can be about making sure what's our product range, what's our niche, what are our price points, what's our competitive advantage, and those sorts of things. That you know, it's slightly more difficult in that way because you've got a lot more competition. But it also gives you the opportunity to do some amazing things with product.
Definitely,
you know, like I said. You know, look at the Nobby and the Dollar Shave Club and the Who Gives a Crap, which is the toilet paper people models, you know.
A great name.
Who would have thought you'd buy toilet paper by subscription? But it's a perfect thing for it.
True. You know? Yep. Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, fantastic. It's a perfect model for it. Yeah, razor blades is another one, you know. I still haven't seen one for feminine hygiene products, but it's another one that's perfect. So anybody out there that's a bit entrepreneurial, there's some models around, but I don't think they're particularly good yet. I haven't seen one yet that really gets me going. So,
and I'm just thinking about pets. Not that I have pets, but I'm thinking there must be a million services and products around pets that can do the same thing.
You could, exactly right.
Oh, yeah. There's no end to it.
No, there's not. So it's quite an exciting time, really. And I think with those things too is, you know, you've now got. I just had a phone call with a client this morning. It's got a really nice business, and we were talking about that, and you now have a lot of tools at your fingertips, you know, the Shopify's and the inventory management systems and the CRMs and then linking into Xero and all these other things. You can actually build world-class software to support quite a small business.
Definitely.
for a cost, but not a massive cost, you know, these big upfront costs and stuff. So you can scale your business really quite quickly by getting access to these tools. You know, that was unprecedented probably 10 years ago, really.
Yeah.
You know, and now you can run quite amazing businesses from home with drop shipping and all sorts of things that you know, really sort of make that sort of stuff, I guess.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know.
Absolutely.
Just opens up opportunities for you, amazing opportunities.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, Russell, thank you very much. Before we leave, I thought maybe we could just leave the viewers and the listeners with a couple of quick tips. One of them was that fantastic phrase you mentioned. What is it? Present doesn't always mean productive.
That's right, yeah.
Present doesn't necessarily mean productive. I love that.
Present is not productive, yeah.
Present is not productive. Any other little bits of gold that you have?
I guess the other one is just keep your focus on strategy. Like strategy, you know, strategy eats operations for business every day. I forget what it is. There's a quote around that. I should find it for you. I'm sorry, but
put it in the show notes.
But you know, it's that whole thing of making sure that you put the time in to actually think through your business and where you want it to be, and think about it not from a linear progression from where you are now. So that's probably my other thing is I don't believe business is a linear progression. From last year to next year, you know, there's some big step improvement you can make to rapidly change your business.
Yep.
Rapidly change it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yep. Fantastic. Well, now, Russell, if people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to go about it?
Probably the easiest way is to go to my website, which is shift.com.au, shift with two Fs. It's a Welsh word for shift. How about that? So it's shift with two Fs, .com.au. Heaps of resources there. So I've got lots of videos, lots of webinars. I run regular webinar programs. I'm also putting together a podcast program as well.
Great.
So we might even do a reciprocal deal there, Darren.
I would love to.
Yeah, and but the moment, heaps of webinars, videos, templates, all that sort of stuff, lots of blog articles. So there's lots of resources there. It's got my contact details on it. I'm more than happy to have a 10-20 minute chat with anybody. If I can help them solve an issue or problem in their business, happy to do that at no cost. And no hard sell. So I'm not interested in working with everybody. I'd like people who are really focused and really keen to get on and work with me in the business. And so therefore, that means you need to make that decision of your own volition, not to be sort of tricked into some program you don't want to be a part of. So
absolutely,
really happy to have a chat with anybody. So, and there's places to do that on the website. They can contact me. We can go from there.
Great. Awesome. Well, Russell, thank you very much. And to all the listeners and viewers out there, a great episode on building a business around your lifestyle and making sure that it's not just another Me Too business. And Russell has done a great job of explaining some of those strategies. So if you want to find out a bit more, please visit his website and ask him any questions and give him a buzz. But thanks again, Russell, for being on the show.
Thanks, Darren. Thanks for having me, mate. I've really enjoyed it.
My pleasure. It's been great. I think it's really useful. And to all the listeners out there, we'll see you next time. Thanks again.